Can God affect human events without violating our freedom of choice? Welcome back to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author for our continuing 13-week series of lessons looking at allusions and images and symbols in Bible prophecy and how the Old Testament contributes to those images. Our opening question today I want to pose to my two conversation partners, Dr. Joseph Branica, professor of chemistry here at Walla Walla, and Dr. George Perez, who teaches in the School of Business. Do you believe God can affect human events without violating our freedom of choice? Yes, no, why not? Is it too big a question?
No, absolutely. I think God's view of our freedom of choice is paramount. There's a reason that we are in the position that we are in, and that's because he values our freedom of choice and our free will. That said, I think he can affect human history without overruling free will. Like, the obvious example is Jesus came here to die on the cross. He didn't force anyone. He didn't change anyone, but he came here and he affected the flow of history irrevocably. He was able to change things salvationally, historically. We set our dates based off of it in various ways without, I don't think, affecting anyone's free will.
That's helpful. George, what do you think?
Well, a Bible verse, I was looking for it, Romans 8:28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. I think there is a theistic view here, and the Bible shows that God does intervene. I'm thinking about prayers, for example.
Uh-huh.
Thinking about maybe miracles. What about providence? So those elements tells me that God does intervene.
And yet he does so in ways that do not remove my ability to think about him, to accept or reject, or to ponder and to wonder and walk a path. So we're thinking this whole quarter about Bible prophecy. And today the topic is upon whom the ends of the earth have come. And so if the end of the world came upon us and we were caught unawares, we might say, God, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you intervene? And yet Christians, I think most of us, look at history in the biblical world and we say it's not an accident that books like Revelation and Jesus in Matthew 24 and other places, Peter, Paul, they all refer to the Old Testament as if God has given us clues along the way, patterns in history of how he will act again in the future. Would you think that's an accurate way of putting it?
I do. And, you know, when the question is formulated, you have two aspects, right? Human events, intervention, and then freedom of choice. If we think that not is possible, then we are falling into probably deism or pantheism that is completely out of the question in the Bible. So that's what I'm thinking, that we are limiting God. And are you familiar with the word syllogism?
I don't think so.
For example, what comes to mind is, do you believe God is all-powerful, that he can create a rock so immense and heavy that he cannot support it?
The logical inconsistency.
Yes. So I think that question, I'm still thinking about that question you pondered at the beginning. But I agree with you. God can do both things.
Yeah. He doesn't remove our choice. And yet he somehow is able to orchestrate events in history that then gave the people perfect freedom. And yet he helps us record those events in scripture so that we can look back at them and realize, wait a second, God has used historical events to give us hints of the future. So one of those is the book of Revelation. And one of those is the book of Peter, 1 Peter and 2 Peter as well, and how they use the story of the flood in Genesis. Now, I suppose we could get into arguments on whether you believe the flood is a historical event or not. I think most Christians would argue that there's geologic evidence for a great deluge. The biblical account suggests that it was a worldwide event, covered the tops of the mountains around the whole planet. And if that's the case, then it makes sense that Jesus and the other apostles would reference it. Now, Jesus in Matthew 24 quotes or alludes to the flood, and I'm wondering if one of you has a Bible and you'd be willing to read that, Matthew 24:36-42. Jesus is going to say that in the last days, it'll be just like it was in the days of Noah. So what were those days like? Dr. Branica, you have that one?
Yes, I'm reading from the ESV.
All right.
So Matthew 24:36-42.
Yep.
But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know at what day your Lord is coming."
All right, what seems to be the main focus of this passage? What is the warning that we're given?
It starts with saying no one knows when it's going to happen. And then it says, as it was in the days of Noah. And then it comes back to this idea of like, hey, one person's going to be doing this and they'll be taken away. One person's going to be doing this and they won't be, right? This idea of it will come as a surprise, right? That seems to be the main through point that I'm seeing.
I'm seeing that when Jesus comes back, he will find people doing what they believe is normal, living a normal life, eating, getting married. It's like nothing is happening. I mean, completely oblivious of what is coming to them.
Yeah, and as you said, Joseph, as well, that these people are not prepared. We read what we might call the inclusio verses 36 and 42. Now, the lesson this week, the quarterly that we're following, and I know a lot of scholars who have studied this say, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, and they immediately jump to Genesis. And I think it's fair to ask, what was the condition of planet Earth in Genesis 6 of the people on Earth when the flood came? What was the condition of the world?
Your thoughts were in constant evil, looking for something like that.
Were evil continually?
Yep.
Yeah, the scriptural record is pretty clear. It says that they were evil continually. Mm-hmm. And God looks everywhere, basically, and he only sees one guy who seems to be righteous, right? Someone who seems to be loyal to him in this time, and this guy's family as well. But you have this picture of like the whole world is just caring about themselves. They're selfish. They're doing whatever they want.
And if we read a little further in Genesis, down in verses 11 and 12 of chapter 6, it says they had corrupted their ways before the Lord, and the earth was filled with violence.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I wonder, does that describe our day as well? Thoughts of people's hearts are evil. They cling to things that are just for pleasure, not for ultimate life eternally, and violence. I mean, like, what are some of our main sports, you know, in the world? Quite violent. Now, I know in Mexico, they play a lot of football, soccer, and people will flop on the ground as if they are hurt, but it's not really that violent. But American football, hockey, right? MMA, you know, these sports where people try and kill each other in the ring. But if we let Matthew speak, and Jesus' words in Matthew, this is not the main focus there, is it? It's not about the condition of the world morally. It's about the condition of people's hearts in terms of, like you said, they were going about their daily life unaware of what's going to happen. The issue at the end of Matthew 24 is, are you ready? Have you been keeping your eyes open? Do you think people were ignorant of the flood coming in their day?
They shouldn't be, because you have Noah who was preaching for 120 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a guy who was out there telling them every day, this is what's going to happen. Now, there might have been
life on the line building a boat.
Yeah.
There was no sea, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was some serious faith. This is building a boat in the middle of the land where there's never been any rain. He was definitely putting his life on the line. And he was preaching. He was preaching his heart out, like, because clearly he believed it if he's building a boat, right? This wasn't just something that he was, you know, saying. This was something he was living. They had the opportunity to know. They chose not to.
They chose not to.
Something that comes to mind is when I teach business ethics, for example, I ask the students, let's say Bernie Madoff, you know, billions of dollars, Ponzi scheme. And I told the students, I asked them, do you think Bernie Madoff one day woke up and said, you know what, let me steal $4 billion from people today? No, was often progressive. Right?
One step after the other.
That's correct. So it seems like when in the days of Noah, people were doing the same things, is that was a progression. And it was a point that no return. And I think it's the same happening today.
People are given opportunities to hear, and they either respond or they walk away. They respond one way or the other. Mm-hmm. We find in Peter, in 2 Peter, Peter refers to the flood in 1 Peter chapter 3 as well. He talks about baptism and the flood being synonymous, that the earth was covered with water as a way to cleanse it. And we now have a similar cleansing, just like the flood, which is interesting, in baptism. We go into the water, we come out a fresh creation, a new life. But then he refers to it again in 2 Peter chapter 3. And there he says that in the last days, scoffers will come saying, where is the promise of Jesus coming? You Adventists, and it doesn't have to be Seventh-day Adventists, you people who are excited about the return of Jesus, where is he? You know, most evangelical Christians that I know are looking forward to Jesus' return in one way or the other, right? We might differ on some of the details, but they want to see Jesus. And praise God for that. But I will tell you that there are the scoffers, you know, the secular, the skeptics, the ultra-educated who say, where is the promise of his coming? Everything's continued ever since the world began, the same way. In other words, naturalism is going to set its course. And yet, he argues that they willfully forget that in the days of the past, God specifically flooded the earth with water, and that at the end, he will destroy it again. Hmm. So the flood becomes a pattern, right? But not of the end by water, but instead by fire, yeah. By fire.
What I find interesting is that in Genesis, when you go through the flood narrative, it basically paints the flood as a second creation. Mm-hmm. It resets creation. Like you have in Genesis 1, you have water over the whole surface of the world. The Spirit hovers over the face of the waters. And basically, you repeat this through the flood account. It's pictured as kind of a second creation. Mm-hmm. So then this is why Peter picks up on this and says, oh, this is like baptism, which is a second creation, being born again, right, of a person. And then he applies it not just to us personally, but then to the world, right? The world is going to have a control, delete, a reset, get rebooted. we're trying to reboot the world here into a way that will be now glorifying to God. If we read later in Revelation, we get to a new heavens and a new earth. We're renewing creation.
Here's where I wish you, as one of our resident chemists on campus, could talk to me about the words that Peter uses when he says, the earth and all that is in it will be burned up, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. And you could tell us all about the physical reactions and what happens to all these things when they're burned up. But we are sadly running out of time. Perhaps the most important part of Peter to remember is that at the very end, he says, because this is going to happen, what sort of people ought we to be? In holiness and godliness, looking forward to the coming of Jesus, right? And I think that's commensurate with what Jesus said in Matthew 24, that these signs of baptism and the flood from the past are markers for us to remember that Jesus is coming again and he wants us to be ready. Our time is up. Thank you both, Joseph and George, for being with me today in our conversation. Thank you to Rick Basket, one of our recording engineers, and also to Kristen Byerly for doing the sound engineering for us. Thank you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.